This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Lend them not to the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living there may be. Whether they are weak or strong, only thing on the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all senseless desires, is not born again into this world.
Okay. Right, tonight it won't be hard to have beginners here because the whole talk is about meditation and doing the meditation. So all the instruction is sort of incorporated in the talking. I don't think I have to do anything. But what I wanted to do in the 3 minutes of meditation was a little kind of an experiment. Now, maybe most of you have seen Ajahn Brahm's book, a little pamphlet called Basic Meditation.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's called Basic Meditation, right? And you know the different steps. So what I want to do, and I have a specific reason for it, is I want to take the first three steps and do 10 minutes on each. Just to go through it fast, the first 10 minutes is just present moment awareness with no thinking about the past or future. The second step is silent present moment awareness in which, let's say, you abandon thinking to the extent that you can. That's a goal. It's silent present moment attention. And three is, see, we haven't had a meditation object yet, right? So in three, we introduce the meditation object that we use here, and that's breath meditation. And breath meditation is a venerable old meditation technique that the Buddha taught, and it was his favorite because it's apparently the most flexible, and it can take you farther and deeper all the way. Breath meditation, in-out breathing. It's anapanasati is what it's called in Pali. It just means in-out breath. It means remembrance of in and out breathing. So that comes up in the third stage. There's one, and then there's a fourth stage that I'll just mention because it's similar to the third stage. It's just an extension of it. But until I explain the whole thing, it won't make sense. So what I want to do is, I guess for that, what I want to do is talk about those stages. And that's why I say this is actually the instruction. The first thing we do is we have present moment awareness, mindfulness, sati. The Pali word is sati, and it means mindfulness in the present moment, or it means awareness of the present moment with memory. That's actually what the term in Pali means. It means memory, but it means present moment awareness. And so this is not some kind of subsidiary state. This is like the very reason for meditation. According to Bhante Gunaratana, a very old and great monk, it is really the reason we might meditate, is to learn present moment awareness, greater and greater present moment awareness. When we start out, we have present moment awareness to some degree, but we have to strengthen it. A present moment awareness compared to our usual kind of awareness is like peripheral vision, where we're aware of everything in the periphery, you know? And then our usual awareness is right straight in the middle and enables us to read and so on, but it's conceptually oriented. Conceptuals by abstracting things out from everything, we make those real objects, turn them into words, and we think of those things as separate from everything else. So what we want to do is abandon that. We want to abandon that kind of thinking and promote a wide general thinking, sati, present moment awareness of everything that's occurring. At the beginning, especially on the first stage. What else can I say about that? Okay, so there's a simile, a simple simile about a hot air balloon. You may have heard this simile before from me, if not from other people. So we want to have an old-fashioned 19th century hot air balloon filled with, of course, with hot air and a gondola underneath it. And it's we have plenty of hot air in the balloon, but it can't get off the ground because it has mooring lines. Okay, the first two mooring lines that won't allow our meditation to get off the ground are thinking about the past and future. So we have to cut those lines. You can think. It's okay to think in this first 10 minutes, but but you can't think about the past or the future. And the past and the future are what mainly take up our thinking, apparently, according to Ajahn Brahm. That's the biggest handicap in meditation, is thinking about the past and the future. That's what happens all the time. So that's in the first 10 minutes. And in the second 10 minutes, the balloon is floating, but it can't go too high because of the constant thinking that we're doing. Okay, that's like having weights around. If you remember those old hot air balloons, they had a lot of sandbags connected to the edge of the gondola all around it. So every time we throw off a sandbag, it can go up a little higher. And the sandbag is like a whole bag full of thoughts. And that's what our mind is, you know. Usually it's just a bag full of thoughts. And so we throw one out, and then we throw another one out. We throw all the thoughts out. You're supposed to get rid of those thoughts. However, when you're meditating, lower your expectations. You won't succeed immediately. But I'll tell you, there's a different kind of success, and that's persistence. Now, you may think of a little child who wants to learn the violin or some complicated musical instrument, and you know very well that when they start out, they're not going to be great violinist at the beginning. It's going to take a lot of patience and persistence and probably forcing, being forced by their parents, but and the child has to learn all the rudiments, right? They have to learn how to hold the instrument, how to hold the bow, how to move the bow across the strings, how to finger the violin. And they have to practice these things over and over to get them right, right? And it takes a long time. So don't think it's any easier for meditation. Meditation is as hard as that. You have to learn it little by little and gradually, but you have to be persistent. And so nothing you do in meditation is lost. Like people think, well, that's a bad meditation or a good meditation. Well, maybe it didn't come up to your expectation, but it wasn't bad because it's like everything is stored and you get a payoff eventually. And as you go along, you'll get little payoffs and then a big one. So, have hope, you know. It may be difficult at the beginning, but you have to be persistent and see that the goal is something really, a real treasure, you know. Okay, what is the goal of meditation in the first place, right? We start with the sati, that's the present moment awareness, and we're aiming towards samadhi, which is deep stillness meditation. And we go through a number of steps, and we go through one called bliss. So by that time, a lot of what are called hindrances are gone. It's hot in here. And we go through bliss, and then we go deeper and deeper into deep stillness meditation. And in the deep stillness meditation, what we get are insights. We get insights into the true nature of reality. Behind what we see, behind all the distortions that we see all the time, there's a true nature of reality, but we can't see it because we're not still enough. We don't have enough mind power. We don't have the insights. Okay, we have insights, and they become what's called wisdom, panna. They become wisdom, and with enough wisdom, then you are awakened, nibbana. Well, that may be a far off goal, right? So, but this is the ultimate goal of meditation for monks. Now, for lay people, there are other things. Maybe you're not aiming that high, but you want relaxation, more relaxation, or get rid of tension, and these kind of things. And you'll find that the meditation, you'll find that helps greatly. In fact, there's a mantra I found out about while I was doing meditation just a couple of days ago, that it's when you breathe in and out, when you breathe in and out, you just say, you say in your mind without like saying it, relax. And it may sound silly, but it really helped me. It really felt good. It felt so good. And I just let that little saying on the, in the in breath it's re, and on the out breath it's lax. It's just very, not a big, powerful mantra, but just a very soft, gentle one. It's relax, relax. So you can try that if you want to. You don't have to. Another, as long as I'm talking about that, there's another one they do in Thailand, which is to say the Buddha. Buddha's name Budo, which is just, if you know grammar, it's used for the subject of a sentence, Budo. That ending is used for the subject of a sentence. Buddha is Buddha with an A is used if you're addressing, if you're like calling the person, I think. And that isn't my strong point grammar, but that's I believe that's a difference. So they say for some reason they said Budo, Budo, Budo. You don't have to use that, and I don't usually even mention those. Mantras, because they're not even mentioned in the scriptures, but a lot of monks in Thailand do it that way. So I'll just throw that out. All right. So let's see. So we had the hot air balloon, meditating on the breath. You know, we're just heating the fire up. We're just breathing, and the fire is heated up, and it goes up and up and up. Now you'll find yourself while you're meditating on the breath that it won't be pure, you might say. You're going to be thinking. You're going to be thinking in all these stages. And like I said before, it's okay. It's just like the child playing the violin. You're going to make the same kind of errors, if I may call them that, over and over again. It's just something that this strengthens the mindfulness. The mindfulness, that's also what sati's called. You're probably familiar with that term. One of its characteristics is that it reminds you of what you want to do. And the more you can see, oh, I'm thinking, and then bring yourself back to what you're supposed to be doing according to the directions, that's like a weightlifter pumping iron. It builds your meditation muscles, your sati muscles. It makes them stronger and stronger to do that over a long period of time. And if you're persistent, and I encourage you to do meditation every day, then it won't be so difficult in the future keep on the mind, whatever the meditation object is, and in this case it's the breath, ultimately it's the breath. So we're going to do 10 minutes, I'll repeat it again, 10 minutes of 10 minutes of just present moment awareness without thinking about the past or the future, and then another 10 minutes of the same, not thinking about the past or future, but it's called silent present moment awareness, because we want to get rid of thought to the extent that we can. And so you want to notice the end of one thought and the beginning of the next. Now, in that space is what you want. That's the state. And if they can get longer and longer, the longer you go. Now, 10 minutes isn't really enough, but it gives you a taste. I wanted to give you a taste of the three. And the third one, again, is we're going into with the breath meditation, the breath as a meditation object, the object of meditation. Now you may wonder what kind of breathing that is. This is not like pranayama in yoga. You're not doing some kind of special breathing, breathing real hard in and out. It's not a deep breath. It's an ordinary breath. You're not holding the breath for sure. It's just your ordinary breathing. In fact, the Buddha's instructions in the scriptures does not say anything about watching your breath. All it says is you set up sati, you set up mindfulness, and you breathe in. And then it says the same thing, and you breathe out. That's what it says. So the breathing that you're doing now, if you can just be aware of knowing an in-breath and knowing an out-breath, I'm sure that nobody has a problem knowing when they're breathing in or breathing out if they look. Right? Does anybody have a problem with that? Because if you do, I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't think anybody is confused about which is in and which is out. Now, that experience is our meditation object. That's being aware of the breath. I won't say looking. Ajahn Sujato told us that nowhere in the suttas does it say watching the breath. Now, I don't know what difference it makes, actually. I thought about it. And maybe looking real intently. That's not something you want to do, is put a lot of this kind of force on anything, because it's going to distort what you're doing. Maybe that's what he was driving at, I don't know. But at any rate, we're going to be observant of the breath, going in and out. And it's just the breath that I mentioned, just the ordinary breath in and out, the one that you're aware of, and it's very small. If you just sit here and breathe, you'll notice your breaths are pretty small, little breaths, just in and out. There's no big deal about them. And the body just breathes by itself. It doesn't really need coaching. It doesn't need anything. And that's another thing that we have a problem with is will, our will. We have in our mind two things, the doer and the knower. You may have heard about this if you've been listening to Dhamma talks. So we have the doer and the knower. The doer is the one that's driving us. It's the one that is forcing us to do one thing or another. It's the will. And the watcher is the one that's sort of undernourished and lacks energy. Ajahn Brahm talked about a woman who came to a meditation retreat, and she was so busy during her daily life and her work that she was exhausted. The doer was so active, she had no energy to do anything, so he just let her sleep for 3 days. Then her meditation was good, and then she became one of the best meditators in the next 3 days. She became one of the best. So you want to save that energy and give it to the knower. The knower is, I guess we could say, it's sati. It's pretty much approximately the same thing. The knower is knowing what's going on, and eventually in awakening, that's the knower taking over, and the doer is left behind. Will is left behind. Will is there, I could break in and say, is there to convince us we have a self. That's to show that we have a self because we're doing this and doing that and eating this and eating that and we have to do this and that. It's all self-oriented. It's all to show, it's all to prove that we really are something and not just nothing. So I'll have a little story about that after the meditation. And, I think we can start. Is everybody clear?
On what? The door's up.
I'm sorry?
Do I open the door's up? Make a big deal.
Yes, please.
Thanks, Dave.
I'm very hot. I don't know about other people, but is anybody cold in here? I feel like I'm out on the beach. Okay, I'm going to try to time this if I can see. Okay, I have a flashlight there. Try to time it around 10 minutes. Okay, so first of all, you can say to yourself, if you want, this is Ajahn Brahm's idea of programming, I am going to do present moment awareness without thinking about the past or future. You say that 3 times in your mind. I am going to do present moment awareness without thinking about the past or future. I am going to do present moment awareness without thinking about either the past or the future. Okay. We start. And I will continue to guide the meditation. So don't worry about when to change or anything. Remember, we're not watching the breath particularly. We're not watching anything. Whatever comes is fine. Whatever comes into our mind is like the clouds. Whatever comes, let it come. Whatever passes through, we'll just let it pass through without holding on, without pushing away, without liking it or disliking it. If it's a sound, it just comes in and goes out. If it's somebody walking, you hear, that's okay. If somebody's coughing, that's just part of the reality of the present moment. Is neither the past nor the future. It's just the present moment. We hear little sounds. Alright, if we started to talk, bring your attention back to the present moment. You can think, you can have thoughts, they're in the present moment, just so they aren't about the past or the future. Just let the thoughts go through without getting attached to them, without them being a compulsive chain. You may notice that you're breathing. That's okay. It's just not the object now. You don't have to look at it all the time. Whatever occurs in the present moment, you may feel the pressure of your hands in your lap. You may feel your bottom pressing down under the seat, your feet on the floor or wherever. Physical, you may feel the movement of air or not. You may feel the heat, the temperature. Whatever occurs in the present moment, thinking the stage is all right. Just don't let it be compulsive thinking in a long scenario. Just see the thoughts and then return to the present moment. Keep on the present moment. Don't get absorbed in any thinking. Feel how this is like a little vacation. Vacation from worries, from trying to figure things out, from doing things. Let the doer go. Just be aware. If you're absorbed in a long train of thought, just return to the present moment. Just abandon that series of thoughts. If it's compulsive, if it's drawing you in, just relax, relaxed in the present moment. Shift to stage two, which is silent present moment awareness without thinking, verbalizing, thinking in words. We'll abandon that. And anytime you start to talk to yourself inside, just see that. Your sati, your present moment awareness will see that, and then you return to the silent present moment. And let those gaps between your one thought and another, let those gaps get bigger and bigger. Remember, silent present moment awareness is what we're doing. So if you want, you can say, I'm now doing silent present moment awareness without verbalizing or without thinking in words. And you say it three times in your mind. Be aware of the present moment, of any sounds, of anything that happens, any feelings you have. Any sensations. Be aware of the thoughts and just abandon the thinking. You can think a lot later. After the session, you can think as much as you want all night long. Hear the silence. Remember to pull your mind out of any kind of thoughts. Definitely no past or future thoughts. All thoughts, just let them go. They come into the mind and you abandon them. You just let them, you're aware of them and they just float through like bubbles. That's awareness of thought. That's all right. You can be aware and just let it go. Keep your mind on the present moment and the silence. Anything that comes into the awareness, sensations, sounds, feelings, pain here in your knee, anything like that. Just allow it to come in the present moment and just pass through. If you're thinking more, step back from that. Stepping back, detach, and let them float away, let them go, just disperse. Step back from thoughts, let them come in, Don't attach to them and let them just go away. They have a lifespan. They won't last forever unless you feed them by attention. That's the secret. Just don't give it any attention. Step back from it. Let it be there. Don't push it away. And it will dissolve. It has a beginning and an end, just like every phenomenon. Bringing the awareness to the present moment. And you find tension building up in your shoulders or your stomach, relax. You can go through the mind, go through the body a little by little and relax any tension points. Just go through from the top to the toes very slowly if you need to. You can do that any time during the meditation. Relax. Just be in the present moment. The present moment is the only reality. Everything takes place in the present moment, neither past nor future. It's eternal. now we shall shift to the third stage, which is breath meditation. Now we have a regular meditation object. The breath, as I described it before, just that experience of in-breath and out-breath that we're aware of. Without doing anything to it, without manipulating. Without manipulating. Now, it's natural for everyone to alter and gradually alter the breath in some way by making it breathing harder or faster or doing one thing or another. And it's the will trying to be in control again, the controller. That's all right, just see that. When you can finally see that, just notice that it happened. That's important. That's what meditation is about, noticing things that happen. Noticing the truth about our lives and how we are and how our mind is. You've seen the controller, if you've seen that. All right, that's just one way that the controller controls. So, go back to the ordinary breath. Now this may happen hundreds of times, who knows? This same noticing about the breath. Just pay attention to the breath. Ignore everything else that happens, all of the sensations. Just return, see them and return. If they call your attention away from the breath, see them in and breathing out. Can say, if you want one word, you could say the mantra, relax, if you want. If you find it helpful, if not, don't. But all thoughts are abandoned. Sounds we don't pay attention to, they just come and go. Whatever comes, let it come. Let whatever goes, just let it go. Don't hold on to anything. Don't attach to any experience. Just be mindful. Be in sati, in the present moment, and be aware of the in-breath and the out-breath. Continue with the in-breath and the out-breath. return to the breath. If you have a pain in your leg, just be content, as content as possible. Just let me see it and return to the breathing. It's not the meditation object. Only the in and out breath is the meditation object. Everything else is abandoned, detached from, released. Your body. If you're slumping over, getting drowsy, straighten up your posture, keep your head straight. If you need to take a couple of deep breaths, if you're really getting drowsy, you can stand up, do standing meditation. If you can't be aware of the whole breath, just be aware of what you can see. Be aware of the in-breaths. Or be aware of the beginning of the in-breath and the beginning of the out-breath. Part of the breath is all right in this stage. back to the breathing. As much of the breath as you can see. You might notice that as you breathe, the breathing actually slows down, or it may speed up, or the breath may become deeper or more shallow, or you might have a ragged breath and then a smooth breath. There are many things you can see in the breath to make it interesting, to make it something to look at. An evaluation for the breath. Carrying a kind of energy, life force into your body, not only the gases, but a kind of life force. You can imagine it as a light coming in and out. Maintain your interest in the breath, evaluation. A few more moments and then we'll conclude. Gradually the lights will go on and you can adjust your eyes. Don't let your eyes be shocked or mind be shocked by the light. Just adjust to it gradually. I think the lights go on slowly anyway. If there's any questions that people have, or reactions, or comments, or anything that you want to bring up before I go into the rest of the talk. Anybody have done anything? The lights. I guess they take a long time to go on, don't they?
Take a few minutes, they come up.
Okay, so we can, if anybody has anything that they want to add, yes, Bob.
Bante, you referred to will as being the doer?
Yes.
Yeah, whenever I do breath meditation, I get the feeling that I've changed the way I breathe.
Uh-huh.
If I try and observe the breath.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. That's very common, and it's true. You have, and it's something that you have to observe. It's a great observation. You've just shown yourself that you have a will that is interfering with your idea of what you want to do,
yes.
Because your will is the master, right now, just as everybody's is, until they've achieved a certain level of enlightenment. Yes, that's exactly right. As soon as you start looking at it, it's like science. You know, they've found out recently in the last century that observing a scientific experiment, especially in having to do with subatomic particles and that observation changes the results.
Yeah.
You've heard that. Everybody's heard that, right? So, but this is a little different. This is in the mind, and anything you do is going to be affected by your will. The thing is that people don't think that's true. It's one of the... Are you familiar with khandhas? It's one of the sankharas. It's the most important one. It's the chaitana. It's will. It's the doer. It's the one who decides and controls, the controller, the master. And by God, he's going to control the breath, whether you like it or not, what's at stake is the idea of yourself. And nobody here is going to let go of that without a lot of work. That's one thing they're not going to let go of readily. And the will is something that proves that you are a self. Okay. Anybody else have anything they want to say? I can't see very well because I have reading glasses. Okay. Alright, so I think I'll start the little talk on here. Actually, the other part was part of it. And I said some things, I may repeat them, but that's alright. First of all, it goes along with what I've just been saying. I have a little tale to tell, a little parable more or less from another tradition that's been slightly adapted. And we start out many years ago in a kingdom, and there's a poor junk dealer who makes his living by buying and selling junk, and of course he has to clean out basements and attics and go around and find dirty old things and collect them and keep them in a pile somewhere. And one day he's in an attic. You can see where this is going probably. He's in an attic, and one of the things he brings home is an old lamp, an oil lamp. And you know what they look like, right? Very slender, and they have a spout. And so he's cleaning this oil lamp. It looks like it may be made of a good metal. You know, maybe it's copper or something. And so he's rubbing it, and you know what happens. It goes, and out comes a big cloud out of the spout, and a genie appears, a jinn. And the genie is a huge, powerful being, something like in Buddhism, maybe it would be an earth deva or something, I don't know, but it's a being that has a lot of power, psychic powers, and just plain power. And the genie says, "Master, you have released me from my bondage. The reward is that I will do your bidding. Anything that you want, I will do it." And, of course, the junk dealer, we've left in an amazed state, in shock, with his eyes bulging out, and he comes to enough, and he starts thinking, well, maybe I can take advantage of this. And he says, well, what kinds of things can you do, genie? And the genie says, I can do anything, I'm the genie. So the junk dealer says, well, all right, He lets his imagination run free and he says, can you make me the king? And instantly he became the king. And then he said, it's true, it's real. The genie's there. He says, can you make me a golden palace, a huge golden palace with jewels all over it? And instantly it was there. The genie had made it instantly. And then he said, can you bring me 100 wives, beautiful women? And there they came in a procession, beautiful, beautiful women in beautiful clothes. And all right, so we'll leave it. He exercised his imagination and got everything he always desired or could imagine. Fleets of boats, armies, beautiful horses and elephants, and everything that you can imagine. And finally, he was completely worn out with this. And this took days, of course, maybe months. And he finally reached the end of it. And he said, I think I've got everything I really need. And so he said, well, genie, I've had enough. I've got everything I need. I release you from your bondage. You can go. The genie says, you cannot release me. The condition is that if you stop giving me work to do, I will slay you. And he holds up a big scimitar, a huge curved sword. And he said, you must give me work. That is part of the condition of having the things that I gave you. So the man no longer knows what to do because he can't think of anything. He's given up. He can't think of anything more. And the genie goes away, and the genie says, I will come in one day. I will give you one day and return at this time, and you must think of something or you die. And so the man sat down and wailed and cried and saw that how vain everything he had done, how futile it was, and how foolish it was. And all he had, he was going to lose. And everything, he knew that he was going to die, and everything he looked around and saw was no better than his junk that he had before. It was all just stuff. And he really had changed. He was still the same junk dealer that he was before, the same guy, the same problems. He hadn't really improved one way or the other. So as he was giving up, he realized he finally gave up totally. He knew he was going to die. And then at that point, he saw some children playing with a little dog, and the little dog had a curly tail. And then he did a double take and thought, wait a minute, maybe I can trick the genie. Can everybody hear me all right? Maybe I can trick that genie. So he said, children, give me that dog just for a little while. Excuse me. And he took the dog and he tested the dog. We'll see how. And he said, yes, I know how I can trick the genie if I could just get him to agree. And so the genie came back and said, smirking with his sword upraised, and he says, well, have you thought of anything, master? It can't really be that difficult. And the man said, well, I have thought of something, but I don't think you can really do it. And the genie was incensed. He, how can you say that? I can do anything. What is it you wish to do? And he said, well, I don't think I'd better show you. You might be depressed if you can't do it. And the genie said, show it to me now. What is it you wish me to do, or I will slay you? So he set the dog in front of him, and he said, all you have to do, genie, is uncurl this doggy's tail without harming it so that it stays straight. And genie looks around as if this man must be kidding. So he sits down and he uncurls the tail, and just like a spring, the tail curls up again. And the genie starts and he goes, So he does it again and again and again, and finally the genie, who apparently wasn't very smart, realizes that he's been tricked, but he can't because he's bound to this condition. He's accepted this job. He started it. He must continue it. And so he can't harm the dog, and he continues. And he goes on, and the man waits for a while, for a few days. And see, he sees, finally, he's very elated and sees that he's free. He's free of it all. Not only is he free of the genie, this monster who forces him to do things, not only is he free, but he's free of all this junk that he's accumulated and has no use for. And he has realized something, that what he needs is something inside. So he knows that there's a teacher in the mountains, and he goes off by himself, leaving all his robes and so on, looking like an ordinary man. He goes into the mountains to the teacher, and he tells them, tells him the story, and says, "I want to learn." And the master teacher says, "Very well, sir. You have passed the first test. Now we shall start our meditation." And so we leave the junk dealer there learning meditation, and the genie is sitting there for maybe 5,000 years uncurling the dog's tail, and finally gets so bored he falls asleep, and he's never been seen since. That's the end of the story about the doggy's tail. All right, so that has to do with what we were talking about. And, oh dear, it's getting late. Let me just see. Okay, this thing about thinking thoughts and being aware of them. What's the difference between being aware? Well, this is subtle, and you have to get into meditation more to really be able to see it. As I said, stepping back is important. That means you're detached. But there's a different kind of texture involved, Bhante-ji says. Being aware of the thoughts is seeing these thoughts appearing without you controlling it, with just like bubbles, and they just come and go, or they pop, or they just have a lifespan and they come and go. You're aware of them, and you're not worried about them, and you don't grasp them, and you don't push them away. But thinking thoughts is a compulsive chain that you can't get away from. You're thinking. That's thinking. I hope that's clear enough. You have to see it. But whenever you get in one of these involved, and I have in these long scenarios when you're meditating that go on and on and on, and suddenly you're, oh my God, I've been sitting here for 45 minutes thinking about such and such. And you know, the kind of scenarios where you say this to the person, and maybe it's something that happened in the past, or you're imagining how you're going to deal with some situation, and it's a whole movie scenario with you're saying one thing and the other person. This is thinking. This is really a chain of compulsive thinking, and you're connected to it, and it's part of the doer, a big part. This is how the doer controls things. One way. All right? Okay, now, you know, one thing I should have said, but why do we have to have a meditation object in the first place? Sorry. That is because stage two, which was a silent present moment awareness, is the same thing as what they call unstructured meditation, and it's really advanced. It's if people know, have been meditating for quite a while, they can handle that pretty well. But in general, I don't recommend it for people who are beginning, because it's so difficult, because you'll be taken away by thought. You'll just be taken away by it. Just like that, and you're thinking again. So you want to have some success. So I would say you need to have a meditation object. That's why we have the breath in particular. And so what do we have? It's like the simile, the way they train an elephant, say in Sri Lanka, is they have an elephant and it's wild and unruly, and you have it tied with a big stout rope. And you don't hold the rope, that would be like unstructured meditation, because the elephant's just too powerful. The mind is too powerful. You have to attach the rope to a big post that's deeply set into the ground, and it's tied firmly. So then the elephant's going to storm around for a few days, and it's going to wail, and then stop, and it's going to pull on the rope, and it won't be able to get free. But finally, it will settle down, and you can feed it, and you'll be safe. You can feed it and train the elephant. Like that's how it is with the mind. Okay, that's how it is with the mind. And that's, we've already heard a story similar in point to that, I guess. Now, when you're meditating, we don't watch the breath go in the nose and follow it around and going down to the lungs and then out. It's just the classic way of describing it. It's like you watch a carpenter with a handsaw, and you watch how he puts his knee on the board, and then he saws the line, right? And where does he move his eyes? What does he watch? Does he watch the tip of the saw going back and forth like a tennis game? If you've ever watched the audience in TV going back and forth. No, he watches that one point where the saw teeth are biting into the wood. That's one point. And our meditation object, which is the breath, is the one point that we watch. Okay? One-pointed. And our meditation is, there's a word, ekagata, which means one-pointedness. Samadhi meditation is one-pointed, as opposed to having a meditation of many points, which can be vipassana, it can be unstructured meditation, where you're aware of whatever comes up. But you have to be skillful to do that and not be carried off by thinking. Another thing, inevitably you'll be carried off by what is called the monkey mind, which goes from one thing to another, thinking about one thing. It's like why they say, call it that, is the monkey grasp one thing and then it grasps another as it's flying through the trees. As it's going through the trees, it grasps one thing after another, but it's never still. That's the monkey mind. It's known all through Eastern tradition. The monkey mind. Just the cure is to return. You see it. First you have to see it. Whenever you're curing anything, a disease, any kind of problem, first you have to know you have it, right? That's obvious, right? You can't get a cure, you can't go to the doctor unless you know there's something wrong. And you have to find out what is wrong. So you have to see it and then consult the teacher or the instructions of meditation instructions in order to know what to do. But basically the instruction is always to return to the breath. That's the basic instruction for any of these distractions. Another thing that happens to people in meditation is what's called sinking mind, where you're not in a jhana state. This is a deep meditation. It's just that you're in a dull state. It's not even really what's called sloth and torpor. It's not, I don't know, it's a hindrance for sure, but it's almost like a trance where nothing is going on. You're awake, you're not falling asleep, but there's just nothing there. So you have to rouse yourself, you have to see that and rouse yourself out of it. Now, another way of dealing with the hindrances is that you've got to, the hindrances, by the way, oh dear.
Keep going.
You have to know that there are hindrances. There are five hindrances. The most important is desire or greed or wanting. And the secondary one, the second most important is hatred. It said greed and hatred. Greed and hatred, desire and ill will. However you want to put it, it's really two sides of the same coin. On the one hand, you either want something or you don't want it. You either get something or you don't get it, and then you push, you're mad and you push away whatever's going on. And then the other three are what's called dullness and drowsiness and restlessness and remorse, which are really results of ill will, basically. You have ill will, say, towards a meditation or wherever you are, and then you drop into getting bored and falling asleep, or your mind goes restlessly like the monkey mind. Remorse is really about the past, having grief about the past. Hindrances, all those. The last one is skeptical doubt. You're skeptical about the meditation teacher, the instructions. Maybe I should try Roman Catholicism. Maybe I should try shamanism. Maybe Tibetan Buddhism. You know, you're just not sure. You're so unsure. All right. Those are the five hindrances, and I'll stop there. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.